Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hi, this is Seth. I'm here for the big question. With Jamie again, obviously.
Hi.
And Mark Harris, who is an independent midwife. You'll remember him from episode 9. Today's big question is this. Is breastfeeding just for mums?
Good question.
Well, obviously, yes. In one sense.
Right.
Okay. Of course, we're called mammals because we feed our babies with our mammary glands. Mm-hmm. And it's only women that can do that. So there's one very real sense in which breastfeeding is just for mums because it's their mammary glands that are doing the feeding. That doesn't mean that men whose partners have made the choice to breastfeed shouldn't be completely involved in the context of supporting that choice.
Right.
Without a doubt.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Another thing is like a lot of men can feel as if they just can't do anything when it comes to, but there's a lot of, we were talking before, there's a lot of things that men can be doing.
Absolutely. We spoke about all the practical support that a man can offer because the woman will be tied up breastfeeding for quite long periods of time. The baby will appear to be at her breast for protracted periods of time. So in terms of the practical support, I think there's something more fundamental that he can do before the baby arrives.
Yeah.
So there's evidence that suggests when a man learns about breastfeeding, learns about the physiology of lactation, begins to understand something about some of the issues that can arise with breastfeeding, that the longevity of breastfeeding, the length of time a woman feeds, is increased when a man is informed and educated.
Right, okay.
There's evidence from Australia and Brighton that women breastfeed for longer when a man has some education around breastfeeding.
Really?
Yeah.
But why is that? Like, why?
Well, I've got some theories. Mm. You see, a woman, when she's breastfeeding, she'll see multiple professionals who will all give her some advice. And let's be frank, she's probably going to get loads of conflicting advice.
Yeah, tell me about it.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
Sometimes, some things some midwives say, I wonder whether they fucking understand the physiology of lactation at all.
Yeah.
Because their advice doesn't seem to fall in line with how physiology works.
But do you think that's a bit of box ticking when it comes to...
To some extent. And some midwives maybe don't get the physiology of lactation. I'm sure most of them do, all right? Mm. But some don't seem to. So a woman is confronted with conflicting advice. Use nipple shields, don't use nipple shields, put the baby down, pick the baby up. So she's constantly being told by different professionals about what she should and shouldn't do.
Right.
What a well-educated man can offer is that kind of buffer, that constant source of support who is reinforcing the education that they both kind of had together.
Right. Okay.
You know, so a woman is understanding how breastfeeding works, what can happen with breastfeeding, what kind of support is needed. He's had a similar type of education. He understands the physiology of lactation. Therefore, he understands the difference between, you know, advice that's going to support that and advice that's not.
Right. Yeah,
so
yeah.
He becomes a constant, trusted support in that context. So the evidence suggests breastfeeding goes on longer when men are involved. So breastfeeding should involve the male partner, without a doubt.
And during, like, not just before the breastfeeding, but like during when women are in the process of breastfeeding, what can men be doing? Because it's very easy to go, well, I can't do anything now. I'm going to sit down and watch TV and not really,
I got it. And I've spoken to a lot of men that are really telling their partner or encouraging their partners to give the baby a bottle because they want to be involved in that feeding process. I mean, one of the things I say in that context is baby massage is such a really cool thing for a man to do. And of course, when the baby isn't feeding, a man can offer his child a massage, which is a really cool thing to do.
Because that's good for the dad as well as the...
And the baby.
It's like a bonding kind of thing, is it?
Yeah, bonding's a bit of an old-fashioned word in the birth world, but it's still, you know, it's still kind of common vernacular. But yeah, the idea of that kind of sense of bond that develops in the context of massage. You've heard of mirror neurons. Have you mirror neurons in neurophysiology?
Oh, yeah, we're well versed in mirror neurons. we were just talking about mirror neurons. We were saying how great they are.
Well, we catch each other's mood.
Right.
And there does seem to now be some physiological component to that. So when you're experiencing a certain sensation in your body, I may well be feeling something similar to it. And there is some evidence that there is a physiological reason for that in the context of mirror neurons. So when you're massaging your baby, there is a transference going on. There is this sense of connection, and it might be more physical than we've actually realized until very recently.
Okay. How can men use that information to kind of support their...
Yeah. When the baby isn't at the breast and doesn't want to feed, I think that gives a man an opportunity to be holding the baby, to be putting the baby against his skin, to whip out his Velcro t-shirt, whip it open and get the baby inside there.
Bondaroo dada.
The Bondaroo dada, get it on. Yeah. And also back to the issue of massage. I really do think it's an undervalued thing. The other thing I think is really potentially quite important is baby wearing.
Okay.
Get yourself a sling and wear the baby at every opportunity. You see, when we were hunter-gatherers, we probably spent a lot of time carrying our babies around. We were nomadic. We spent thousands of years being nomadic hunter-gatherers. It wasn't until we started to grow vegetables that we started to place ourselves into one place.
And wheat.
Exactly. Yep. Yeah, we haven't
domesticated us.
Exactly. Yeah. I've read Sapiens. Yeah, yeah. What a fantastic fucking book.
Yeah.
Until I read that book, I didn't realize there were six species of humans on the planet at the same time.
We conquered all.
Probably because of our ability to hallucinate a non-physical reality and enroll other people into that reality. But yeah, so we were probably carrying babies for thousands of years. So this revival of sling wearing is a really good thing for a man to do.
Did you see about the... my parents were actually telling me about this, that the woman who was kicked out of the V&A for breastfeeding.
Really? When was that?
A few weeks ago.
Really?
Yeah, she was in a museum full of like naked statues. And she was breastfeeding, and some people complained and got shitty about it, and the security kind of asked to leave. The V&A have apologised since.
It's funny, because you get these stories that come out every so often about, like, I remember one a few years ago where a lady was, like, asked to leave a swimming pool or something.
Mm.
And, you know, if it, like, I mean, I'm sure it happens all the time, but, like, they cause such a furore when, like, they become, like, big news. I'm surprised that people just, like, continue to do it.
Well... What she said was that she said the reason it's important is that embarrassment about breastfeeding is one of the most common reasons that women give up. So I think that was her kind of, you're shaking your head there, Mark.
I started being a midwife over 25 years ago, and the rates around breastfeeding haven't changed much.
Mm.
The initiation rates have gone up from 61% to 81%, but that's probably because we now count it. So if a baby looks at the breast now, someone will tick, oh, yeah, initiated.
Right.
But in terms of the women that are still breastfeeding at 6 months and 6 weeks, the rates haven't changed in 20-odd years.
Right.
And at a year, we have the lowest breastfeeding rates in the world.
In the UK?
Really?
In terms of longevity of breastfeeding rates, at a year, the UK breastfeeding rates are the lowest in the world. Right, and there are all kinds of economic reasons for that.
Yeah, right, yeah, so I was going to ask.
Yeah, there's all kinds of economic reasons for that. I mean, often a woman chooses to go back to work because we need two incomes coming in.
Right.
And a woman who is solely breastfeeding and trying to work full time That's a challenge in anyone's...
I thought the US would be worse then for that, because they go back apparently, much quicker, don't they?
No, apparently not. We've got the, you know, add a year. So that's breastfeeding for a whole year. So
but do you think it's because there's a bit of a stigma attached to women breastfeeding kids over a certain age?
Yeah, I think there is.
And I think it's quite British to be a bit prude about it. And yeah. Be like, oh, no, can't kind of do that. Like when we were talking about it, even like just... my family and I were talking about this woman because my dad and my mum and dad happened to be at the V&A when this went, and she really? Saw the woman, and I think it was a bit of an older baby, and so I think that's why people were getting a bit weird about it. But
was it a baby or was it actually like a young adult?
No, it was a baby.
Do you know the Guinness Book of Records, the longest breastfeeding is a Polish chap of 19.
Whoa. It's like that David Walliams sketch with Bitty, isn't it? From Little Britain.
It is a bit like that. Yeah. But it's just, and Game of Thrones.
Yes.
And that kid, Alice actually teaches, who used to teach that kid.
There we go.
But I was going to ask, like...
Game of Thrones? I've seen all of that. I didn't remember that bit.
Yeah, there's a kid in the Eyrie that, is it called the Eyrie?
Yeah,
it is. That high up.
Oh,
the big hole
with the hole in the ground. Yeah, I saw that bit. Yeah. I think it is controversial. Some women feed their child up to three, you know, three or four. My late wife fed one of our children up to 18 months, which was considered unusual.
That's it. I mean, even in the discussion that we had between my, you know, members of my family, it definitely split opinion. You know, it was never seen as something wrong at all, but it was just it was definitely a discussion that we had.
It's only weird because of our cultural patterns.
Is it weird, or is it just a bit? Yeah, I guess it's a cultural thing. You don't see it a lot.
There's a growing number of women that are now owning up, inverted commas, to having orgasmic experiences when they breastfeed. And that's a whole...
Is that where we draw the line?
No, I don't think so. Well, if you think about the hormones responsible for female sexual release, it's the same family responsible for birth, and it's the same family of hormones responsible for breastfeeding.
It's bloody oxytocin again,
exactly,
isn't it?
Yeah. Oxytocin and prolactin. So women having an orgasmic response to breastfeeding kicks in all kinds of taboos about paedophilia and ridiculous stuff like that.
Yeah.
But it's a physiological phenomenon. Women orgasm giving birth.
Mm.
I've had women say to me, is it all right if I masturbate when they're labouring? I've had at least four women in my career say, are you comfortable with me masturbating? And I said, it's all right, so long as it's not the extended role of the midwife.
Oh,
yeah, yeah. But it makes total sense, because if a woman is experiencing sexual release in the context of giving birth, it makes sense hormonally.
Yeah.
And for those women, it is what they wanted. For me, the key is understanding that there's no morality in nature. We invented morality with our neocortex and our ability to speak language. So for me, it's about not judging another's choice. So if someone chooses to formula feed, that's their choice. So long as they've got good, unbiased information, which is very hard to do these days with the Machiavellian formula companies who are very good at manipulating information in order to influence our choices.
Yeah.
But so long as people are making informed choices, why not feed a baby in public?
Yeah.
I think we on this podcast, we subscribe to that.
Definitely, yeah.
No right way, right?
Yeah. Sorry?
There's no right way.
No, obviously. Yeah. No. And but, I think...
Sorry, go on.
No, go on. I was going to say breastfeeding in public, I think that's... You know, I think... I don't think there should be any sort of taboo about that. I think it's... No. A woman can breastfeed wherever... I don't even think that's that controversial to say that. I think that's just...
No, absolutely.
Okay, last thing to end on. Have you tried... Seth, have you tried Alice's breast milk?
Yes.
And what did it taste like?
You know, I mean, this goes with what you're saying, is it changes over time. And the first time I tried it, it tasted like you know, fine. Like, it was perfectly palatable. I wouldn't say I would, like, swap it for my standard milk in my coffee.
I was going to say, was it in your coffee?
No, I just had a little taste. I don't find it that weird or I'm not that squeamish. Funnily enough, Alice was less interested in tasting it than I was.
Okay. I still haven't done it. It's one of those things.
And so you're squeamish about it?
A little bit, I think, yeah.
Yeah. Well, obviously.
Obviously, otherwise I'd have just been guzzling that. Do you know what I mean?
Have some.
Mark, have you tasted it?
I have tasted it.
Yeah?
Yeah. It's not neither here nor there for me. It didn't feel offensive.
Yeah.
I didn't, you know, not like it. It's almost quite watery.
Yeah, it was water. And then I found it tasted more metallic-y.
Yeah, like coconut milk. No, I'm joking.
What
a bit now, like what, coconut milk.
What about human cheese?
No, no, that's where we draw the line on this
ice cream
podcast. No, okay. Stop it. Okay. Stop it.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.